sit and close her eyes and use her imagination. A comedy, mystery, a fireside chat. Together we sat, listening nightly to our favorite show. Radio, oh, why did you ever go? Oh, won't you please come back and entertain us? I long to turn the dial again to hear the past smile again. Radio, I miss you so.
Once again, it's time for Yesteryear. A look back at your favorite dramas, westerns, comedies, and musical variety shows from the golden age of radio. Here's your host for Yesteryear, Craig Roberts.
It's time once again to settle into your favorite easy chair for another hour of vintage radio. Later on, we'll enter Dimension X and The Outer Limit. But first, let's enjoy some adventure and mystery with The Fat Man and Nightmare Murder. The Fat Man was created by Dashiell Hammett, especially for radio. The program was first heard on ABC in January of 1946. Stepping into those oversized shoes was J. Scott Smart, who weighed 270 pounds himself and filled them nicely. Though he created the character and gave his name to the series, Dashiell Hammett, in fact, left the writing up to Lawrence Klee. Ed Begley co-starred as Lieutenant McKenzie, and regular support was received from Paul Stewart, Linda Watkins, and Mary Patton. The show ran for more than a year as an ABC sustainer, was eventually picked up in 1947 by the Norwich Company for Pepto-Bismol. Return with us now to those thrilling days of yesteryear with The Fat Man and Nightmare Murders from January of 1951. So why not pick up the phone and invite a friend to listen right now to another classic show from the golden age of radio here on Yesteryear.
Major Bose, I miss the shadow nose, Fred Allen's alley folks, the laughter of Duffy's Tavern, Helen Trent, oh, then we went to Can You Top This? Suspense in the Whistler sent those shivers up our spines. Uncle Don, I wish that he was on. Jack Armstrong, Merton Marr, J. Miss and Andy. I long to turn the dial again to hear the past smile again. Radio, I miss you. Sodio, volio, dodio, do.
Here comes the Fat Man in The Nightmare Murder, starring J. Scott Smart.
There he goes. He's stepping on the scales. Weight, 237 pounds. Fortune, danger. Who is it?
The Fat Man. It takes a good man to make a first-class old-fashioned. You have to muddle the sugar, bitters, and water properly, then toss in the ice and whiskey, and then carefully twist a lemon peel on top. Like anything else, it's simply a matter of following the recipe. But here's another illustration. If you take a liberal jigger of motive, add a slice of opportunity and a dash of means, and then pile a dozen or more old fashions on top of this, you're quite likely to end up with a real gruesome hangover. Murder. Like any solid, normal, routine job, this one began in my office. It was just after lunch. My feet were on the desk. I was munching a peppermint. I'd propped the latest edition just south of the bulge that marked the last resting place of a brace of breaded pork chops when the phone rang. Runyon speaking.
The detective?
That's a debatable point, but I like to think so. Who's this?
My name's George Dutton. Maybe you've heard of me.
Oh, you mean the author?
That's a debatable point, too. I write mystery stories.
Yes, I know. About private eyes who get hit on the head.
Look, I've never had any need for a private eye. I don't even know what one looks like. I never even saw a pistol or a gangster or a corpse until last night. A corpse, that is.
Wait a minute. Let's take this in sequence. Are you hiring me?
Maybe. How much?
50 in expenses.
Well, that's a lot, but I need you pretty badly.
What's the trouble?
I killed a girl last night. I want you to prove it.
Say that again and slower.
You better come down here right away.
Where are you?
Melville Hospital. Alcoholic ward.
The closest I'd ever been to the alcoholic ward at Melville was reading The Lost Weekend. After I convinced them I wasn't a prospective client, they gave me some of the dope on George Dutton. Their assumption was his writer's imagination had picked up an Italian collaborator during the period in question, namely a batch of martinis.
Runyon?
Yeah. What can I do for you, George?
Sit down. On the bed. I'll take it easy, will you? My head.
I know what you mean. Is that better?
Yeah. Now, look. You're going to think I'm crazy like the rest of them, but I'm not paying you for an opinion. Here. Here's 2 days' worth. $100.
Thanks. Now, for this, I'm supposed to hang a murder rap on you, huh? Or did I hear it right over the phone?
You did. At least I'll know, Runyon, if it happened. If I killed her, at least I'll know I'm not crazy.
All right,
anything's
George.
Better than that kind of doubt, Runyon. Anything.
Now, take it easy, George. Just tell me about it, huh?
Yeah. I know. Calm, collected, lucid, logical, right? Yeah. Okay. I've been working hard, see? Trying to meet my publisher's deadline on a novel. I got tired last night around 7 and went to bed. Dead, wrung out, gone, you know? Now, this I'm sure of. Somewhere around 10 or 11 o'clock, I got up, put on my clothes, and went out for a walk around the block. I just turned the corner when it happened.
What?
I'd seen the car a lot in my neighborhood, a black Buick convertible. I'd seen the girl in it, too. Stunning girl, blonde, eyes like sapphires, figure like... Well,
yeah, I know what you mean. So what?
So she pulled up to the curb and asked me to get in.
How come?
Well, am I so horrible? She did it, that's all.
Okay. Who was she?
I don't know. I don't know anything about her. She handed me a bottle and that's how it started.
Mm-hmm. Mistake number one.
You're so right. So anyway, we drove around for a while and I listened to her talk and pretty soon the bottle was gone, so... Pulled out another one, and pretty soon that one was gone, too.
What'd she talk about?
Death?
Hmm?
Yeah. It seemed perfectly normal at the time. She was fascinated by death, wrote poems about it, she said, quoted from them all the time. Anyway, things got pretty fuzzy about then. I don't remember much. People, voices, lights. One thing, though, Runyon. One thing. There was a big red rooster about 10 feet high.
Oh, yeah, naturally. Wouldn't be an evening without one. What was his name?
Now, wait a minute. A sign, Runyon, a neon sign. I remember it blinking at me while she stopped by the trash can.
What trash can?
How do I know what trash can? A trash can. There was the red rooster and the trash can, and she stopped and took something out of her purse and dropped it in. There were more lights and more people and more riding in the car, and then pretty soon we were alone. She was pouring drinks for the two of us.
And where was this?
I don't know. You got me. She handed me a glass, see? And raised hers for a toast. To death, she said. And I saw she had a gun in her hand, pointing it at her head. I grabbed it, got a hold of it, but it went off.
Oh, great.
Last thing I remember was her lying on the floor, and then the floor was rushing up at me. Well, that's it.
What do you mean, that's it? What happened after that?
Nothing. When I opened my eyes, I was in my own bed, in my own apartment, with my clothes right where I'd left them at 7 the night before. The night man swears I wasn't out of my room all night. Nobody believed me. They said I dreamed it. I had a couple more drinks, found the cop on the beat and told him, too. That's how I got here. They all think I'm crazy. Well, maybe I am. Maybe I am. But go on. Find out for me, Runyon. Get on it, will you? Get on it.
So I got on it. First, there was the janitor at George's apartment.
Listen, Mr. Runyon, I've been nightman here for 12 years. I know George Dutton as long as he lives here. He couldn't leave this building last night without me seeing him, and I didn't see him. You can take my word. He's nuts.
Then there was the bartender George had mentioned.
Look, all I know is he come in at an indecent hour this morning, screaming for the hair of the dog that bit him. Just like all the other times. Yeah, especially the last time.
What happened last time?
Oh, same thing, a couple of years ago. Only that night, he got out of bed and trapped Adolf Hitler in the information booth at Grand Central.
The cop who'd hauled him over to Melville said the same thing. Likewise, a couple of newsboys. Verdict, unanimous. George was a lush and a loony. And I was inclined to go along with him. On the theory that a special convertible, complete with blonde, is something even a New Yorker will stop and look at, I quizzed the service stations around George's apartment house. Sure enough, up comes a guy who'd greased its gold-plated chassis only a month before. The record showed it belonged to a Lydia Bradshaw at a Park Avenue address that went with the car, so I trotted over. Some kind of a soiree was going on in the huge living room. The butler looked at me, raised his eyebrows one at a time, and finally decided I wouldn't run off at the silver plate and hustle me into the library, which seemed to have another occupant.
As a spirit with yellow eyes gleaming, will I to thy couch come again?
When you say that, smile. What is it?
This book, Baudelaire. Lousy translation. By the way, I'm Joan Cameron, Lydia's poor country cousin. Who are you? One of Uncle Charles' tribe of sycophants?
Oh, I'm not sure what that means, but I don't think so. My name's Brad Runyon.
Oh.
Where is Lydia, by the way?
Out somewhere. You looking for her?
Yeah.
Well, you're just in time. She and Uncle Charles are going abroad, you know. Sailing tonight.
Oh, who's Uncle Charles?
Lydia's guardian. Keeper to the keys to the Bradshaw Exchequer.
Well, that sounds important.
It is.
Oh, in the chips, huh?
Oh, no. He just has a pair of scissors to clip the coupons for Lydia, which, incidentally, is a full-time job. Mm-hmm. And that concludes my dissertation on the Bradshaws, a morbid subject at best. Let's talk about you.
Sure, sweetheart. After we talk about a quick way I can get a hold of Uncle Charles.
I beg your pardon?
This friend is Uncle Charles.
That's pretty quick. How do you do, Mr. Bradshaw?
Ah, Mr. Runyon, isn't it?
It is. Now, if you'll excuse...
Girl. Now, Mr. Runyon.
I've come on a peculiar errand, Mr. Bradshaw. When do you expect your niece Lydia back?
Oh, in an hour, perhaps two. Why?
I wonder if she'd consider making a short visit to Melville Hospital.
Melville? Good heavens, what for?
A client of mine thinks he killed her last night.
Now, just a minute. What kind of nonsense is this?
Well, I know it sounds crazy, but it isn't nonsense. His name's George Dutton, and he's in the alcoholic ward. He fell off the wagon last night, but hard. He has seen your niece riding around her convertible. She impressed him. So, instead of the usual pink elephants, he had some hallucination about taking a ride with her last night and killing her. We can't talk him out of it.
Well, that's fantastic. What do you want Lydia to do about it?
Well, just stop by the hospital and convince him he's wrong, that's all.
But don't you understand we're sailing for Europe at midnight?
Now, look, this will only take her 10 minutes. It may mean the man's sanity.
Well...
Otherwise, he's liable to be running around to the police and the newspapers.
Well, I'll ask Lydia to drop by.
Good, and thanks. I'll be running along, then. Sorry to trouble you, Mr. Crenshaw.
Well... What's the verdict, Runyon? You think I'm nuts now, too, huh?
George, listen. Now, hold yourself. This doesn't mean you're nuts. Could happen
anyway. Shut up. What was her name?
Lydia Bradshaw.
Bradshaw?
Yeah, and she's coming over here to see
you. Now listen, Runyon, you're working for me. See, you're not working for them.
Wait a minute, George.
You listen to me. I'm telling you this happened. I was there. I wasn't in bed dreaming it. This dame is dead. Do you understand that?
Shut up over there.
I won't shut up.
I'm telling you, kids, you'll go off your rockers.
Now, look, Doc, wait. Look, George, there's no use arguing about it. I talked to her uncle. The girl's coming. That'll convince you, won't it?
She's not coming here because she's dead. She's dead. I held her with these two arms. I heard the gun go off. I felt her go limp in my arm. In my arm. Oh, no. No.
I'm sorry. Who's George, Doc?
Right over there.
I'm Lydia Bradshaw.
Well, what about it, George?
You're all right.
What do you mean, Mr. Duck?
Well, last night we were together. Don't you remember?
Why, no. Sorry, I don't. I don't remember ever seeing you before.
Go away.
Come on.
Is there anything I can do?
No, you may as well go.
But the poor man...
You heard what he said. Now go on. Get out of here. Get out!
I'm terribly sorry.
Thanks very much, Miss Bradshaw.
I do hope it'll be all right.
Yeah. Good night.
Goodbye.
Well, George, is that the girl?
Yeah. That's the girl.
So that tied it up. I refunded him $50 of the $100 he gave me, recommended a good psychiatrist, and took off. It was after my dinner time, so I walked toward the East 50s, a little Italian restaurant that makes wonderful lasagna. Suddenly, I found myself looking across the street at a bar on the opposite corner with a blazing red rooster in neon lights. Of course, he could have dreamed this, too. In his heyday, he probably knew every pub in town. But the business of the trash can opposite the entrance, which was right where he said it was pretty accurate dreaming, even for a professional dreamer like George. For this reason, I decided to sacrifice my dignity. I sidled up to the trash can and began probing around. It was there. A slim volume in black Morocco with gold lettering on the cover reading Skyward, Poems in Praise of Death by Lydia Bradshaw. I kicked myself for refunding that $50. I stood for a minute in the glow of the Red Rooster sign and thumbed through the book of poems. Then I went into the bar.
Yes, sir. What'll you have?
Make it a beer.
Any special kind?
Well...
Now, how about a tall, cool glass of McCoy's Pale Ale?
That sounds like a commercial.
It is. See the sign up there? Don't let them fool you, brother. Reach for the real McCoy.
Okay, I'm sold. Draw one.
Right.
I quaffed my real McCoy and skimmed through Lydia's Odes to the Dark Angel. Tossing a Morocco-bound book into a trash can, it seemed a strange thing for a girl to do until you read the poetry, whereupon it became clearly the only thing to do. It was so awful, I gave up trying to read it and concentrated on the frontispiece, which, as with all privately printed works, was a picture of the author. Looking at it now, it seemed to me as if I'd seen Lydia Bradshaw somewhere before. Somewhere before she'd walked into George's room at the hospital. But I couldn't put my finger on it.
How about another real McCoy?
No. Wait a minute. Don't go away.
Yeah?
Were you here last night?
Sure. Why?
Here, take a look at this picture. You ever seen her?
Who is she?
Name's Lydia Bradshaw. Was she in here last night?
I don't know. Maybe, but I don't remember seeing her. She came in with the after theater punch. I wouldn't remember anyway. Mobbing here four deep at the bar.
Why, Fred?
Huh? Oh, excuse me, I got
to... Wait a minute, Frank. What do you mean you don't know Lydia?
Well, I didn't say that, Miss Cameron.
Frank?
I just... Well, I mean, I didn't say I don't know her. I only said I wouldn't remember if she was in here during rush hour last night. Excuse me, I got a customer waiting.
Customer, my foot. The liar. Oh, please don't think I'm dogging your footsteps, Mr. Runyon.
How do you happen to come here?
Always do.
You say he knows your cousin, Lydia Brashaw?
He ought to. She owns the place. Tell me, did you steal that book from the library?
Oh, no. I picked it out of the trash can outside.
What?
Yeah, it's Scout's Honor.
But it's the only one she has left. She'd die before she'd throw it away.
How about afterwards?
What do you mean?
No, just skip it. Here, look at this inscription on the flyleaf. To Greg, someday I'll find you. What does she mean by that?
Greg Stanhope. She used to think she was in love with him. Maybe she was, I don't know. But Uncle Charles decided it was wrong and broke it up. A fatal mistake, I might add.
Why fatal?
They found Greg the next day with a champagne glass in one hand and a gun in the other. He'd shot himself.
Hello, George?
Yeah?
This is Runyon.
What do you waste your time on me for, Runyon? I'm nuts, you know.
Now,
crazy.
Now, shut up, George. Take it easy. Answer me a couple of questions. You know anybody named Stanhope?
Greg Stanhope?
Yeah.
No, I never heard of him.
Uh-huh. How did you happen to say Greg?
I don't know. It just popped into my head. Greg Stanhope. It goes together somehow. Greg... Wait a minute. I do know. Yeah, She was talking about him last night. That's who she toasted when she raised her glass just before she
Okay. Now, one more question, George. Did anyone see you leave the building last night?
Well, sure, the janitor.
Anyone else?
No.
Well, look, supposing it went like you said. Suppose someone picked you off the floor at the Bradshaw apartment and brought you home. Is there anyone who'd know exactly where to hang your clothes and straighten out the rest of your apartment besides you?
Sure, the janitor would, but he already told
you. He's got a couple of sidelines. George... As a writer, this may come as a disappointment to you, but you aren't nuts.
Listen, Mr. Runyon, get your foot out of my door before
I... Now, take it easy, pal. I'm coming in.
I already told you all I know about George Dutton.
That I'm inclined to doubt. Now, sit down, pal. You've had a hard day pushing a broom and raking in cash.
The one I should call a cop? There's a law against breaking into a guy's apartment.
There's also a law against criminal conspiracy.
I said I give it to you this afternoon, all of it. Don't call me no criminal conspiracy because I'm janitor, no criminal, see?
How much did Charles Bradshaw pay you to tell me George wasn't out of his apartment last night?
I don't know nothing, I tell you. Now get out of here.
Now you come clean first. You saw George coming and going. You helped Bradshaw put him to bed last night.
No, I didn't. Honest, I didn't.
You better level with me, Buster, before
no.
I'd knock...
I don't come near me.
Someone had fired through the window and nailed the janitor before I could make him talk. I rushed over, opened the window, and hit the back alley in half a minute flat, but it was too late. A car roared off half a block away, and that was that. I walked back to where the killer must have stood, trying to make sense out of nonsense. I'd run into my share of murders, but this was the first time in my book that someone committed one to cover up another one someone else had confessed to. Now, if that sounds confusing, it's only because it was. A party was going on three floors up. It was nice to know someone was having a good time, because I wasn't. I leaned back against the wall and mopped my head. There had to be an answer somewhere. And it was lucky I'd leaned back, or I would have been brained. A bottle whistled down three floors and glanced off my shoulder and bounced into some soft rubbish in the alley. I picked it up, looked at the label, and suddenly it hit me. It was an answer from out of the blue. "Don't let them fool you, brother," it said. "Reach for the real McCoy." I found a phone and called the hospital and left instructions for George. Then I hailed a cab and rushed over to Lydia Bradshaw's apartment. What time is it, Miss,
Bradshaw.
Yeah, Bradshaw.
It's almost 11. As I told you, Mr. Runyon, Uncle Charles is extremely busy taking care of the baggage and won't have time to talk to you before we
sail. Yeah, sure, I know. How come he forgot that trunk over there, Miss,
Bradshaw.
Yeah, Bradshaw. I'm having a tough time with that name. What about that trunk?
It's full of his first editions for the vault while we're gone.
Now, let's see. Where was I?
Will you stop reading that stupid book?
Stupid? Listen to this. Astride the cosmic threshold, I gazed back toward the old familiar lighted realm once more, then resolutely turned my face the new way, toward the wild, unlighted shore. Three guesses now. Byron, Keats, or Nick Kenny?
I don't know, and I don't care.
You ought to know, baby. You wrote it.
What do you mean, Mr. Runyon?
Poems in Praise of Death by Lydia Bradshaw. This mean anything to you?
An empty beer bottle, isn't it?
Yeah. Someone almost brained me with it tonight. McCoy's Pale Ale. Don't let them fool you, brother. Reach for the real McCoy. Still don't remember?
Should I?
Yeah. Took me a while, but I did. I wondered why you looked familiar to me.
Me?
Yeah. You two girls, two pictures. One of these girls is Lydia Bradshaw, Park Avenue debutante, and the other is a professional model. Which one is the real McCoy? It was an ad in all the magazines 3 years ago.
You figured out which is which by now, I presume.
Yeah. Why did you play along with him?
Is there any harm in it?
Well, I can think of about six laws you're breaking, not the least of which is criminal conspiracy.
Criminal? What are you...
Just a minute, Lydia. Stay where you are, both of you.
Oh.
My name's not Lydia. Let's stop the pretense.
Gonna make it a double header tonight, Uncle Charles?
I might.
Double what?
Murder.
Murder? What are you...
Shut up.
But murder? I didn't know anything about this. All you said was she'd kill herself and you wanted to avoid a scandal about suicide.
It was a scandal, all right, but not about suicide, was it, Uncle Charles?
But what was it?
When Lydia killed herself last night, it threw the whole estate into the hands of the executors, opened the books to the accountants. How much had you embezzled, Uncle Charles? A couple hundred G's, maybe?
More than that, Runyon. But you're wrong on a technicality. It's not a scandal, not unless it gets out. And it's not going to get out. I killed once. They can't do any more to me for two or three.
You can't cover it that way, Bradshaw.
No? Watch me, Runyon. Watch me.
But don't, Mr. Bradshaw, no!
Hey, Runyon. Runyon, this is the place.
George,
I was here.
You're just in time.
Huh? Who?
You've killed him.
No, but he's going to have quite a headache. The McCoy Company puts out a good bottle, too.
Oh.
Catch her?
It's two down. Put her on the sofa, George, while I call headquarters.
Lydia Bradshaw.
No. This is the reasonably accurate facsimile. We'll find Lydia Bradshaw in that trunk over there.
Well, then I did kill her.
No, you didn't. She committed suicide, but her guardian didn't dare let it be known, or he'd have been discovered as an embezzler.
What do you mean?
Skip it for now. I need a drink. How about you?
Runyon, if it's all the same to you, I'll take sarsaparilla.
The Fat Man, starring J. Scott Smart, was directed by Clark Andrews. Heard on tonight's show were Lyle Sudrow as George Dutton and Gertrude Warner as Joan Cameron. The music was composed by Mark Winston. Your announcer, Don Lowe. Listen next week to another exciting adventure of the Fat Man. G-note for murder.
From January of 1951, there's the Fat Man with Nightmare Murders. In a moment, we'll enter Dimension X and the Outer Limit as Yesteryear continues.
You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio, where the big bands swing. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear. Here's Craig Roberts.
Dimension X was first heard on NBC in April of 1950, but until its premiere, a full two decades after network radio was established, there were no major science fiction series of broad appeal to adults. This show dramatized the work of such young writers as Ray Bradbury, Isaac Asimov, and others. In-house scriptwriter was Ernest Canoy, who adapted the masterworks and contributed occasional stories of his own. Dimension X was a very effective demonstration of what could be done with science fiction on the radio. Dimension X played heavily on adventures in time and space told in future tense. Return with us now to those thrilling days of yesteryear with Dimension X and The Outer Limit from April of 1950, another classic program from the radio vault of yesteryear.
Adventures in time and space, told in future tense.
Dimension X.
Can you predict what will come in 100 years, or in 10, or in the next minute? Some people think they can. Nuclear scientists, mathematicians, astronomers, biologists. They'll predict the shape of the future. Why? Because they make the future. Because they see beyond the known dimensions of time and space into the unknown. Dimension X. We go ahead now in time to 1965. We're on a vast concrete runway set in the desert of the Southwest. A giant metal ship stands before us, prow pointed for the stars. And in 5 minutes, the signal will flash and it will tear up through the atmosphere to the outer limit.
Attention. Attention. Clear field for takeoff. Clear field.
5 minutes, Steve.
For right. Takeoff.
When we're up, Charlie.
Turn it over.
I want to go over procedure again, Steve.
Don't worry, I got it straight.
You just make sure.
Okay. I take her up on jets to 50,000, then I cut in the rockets.
No lower, or your tail blast will burn out three counties.
I climb 4 minutes on rockets, then start maneuver tests.
Remember that. This ship isn't like those strato rockets you've been testing. She's the first one built for outer space. If she works, she can go clear to the moon.
If I'd have known that, I'd have brought my toothbrush.
Well, not this trip. Now get this, Steve. You've got power there to clear the Earth's gravitational field. But remember, after you cut in the rockets, you've only got 10 minutes fuel. If you go beyond the outer limit and don't save fuel for the return...
I know, I won't get down again.
That's right, Steve. You'll drift off into space. Get that now. 10 minutes fuel.
Gotcha.
As far as I'm concerned, this project is a lot more important than that cosmic ray bomb they're testing out in the Pacific tonight.
Well, Security Commission brass doesn't think so. I don't see any undersecretaries under anything.
Don't worry. The long run, our ship will make the CR bomb back page stuff. But in the meantime, it's just as dangerous. Remember, half the principles in this ship are pure theory, Steve. Slide rule stuff. If anything goes wrong, we may have to scrape you off the landscape with a soup spoon.
You have a charming sense of humor.
Well, here's what I'm getting at. We're risking your neck in this test. If anything blows, we don't want to have the next man pull the same boner.
I know, Hank.
So keep your mic open and keep talking. If anything goes wrong, we want to know exactly why. And we won't be able to ask you. Let us know before you pull every switch. Before you do anything. You got that?
Yeah.
Even if you only have to blow your nose.
All right, get those fuel lines away.
Okay, Mr. Gross.
Well, I guess that's about all, Steve.
That reminds me. Look, if Mary calls, I'm just up on a milk run. I didn't tell her today was it.
How is she?
She's okay, but she's due about now, and I don't want her to be nervous.
Hey, I didn't know the baby was that close.
Yeah?
Steve, I really ought to be sending a single man on this job.
What, and cut me out of a soft paycheck? Forget it, Hank. You know, you can't get anybody else who can take 15 G's acceleration when those rockets cut in.
Yeah, I know. It's time, Steve.
Yeah. Well, see you later. Don't worry, Hank. I'll sweat for both of us. Button her up, Charlie. So long, Hank.
So long. We'll give you the light from control. Okay, Steve. Got you on the speaker. I'm ready to go.
Mr. Hanson.
Ready on radar, Sergeant?
Check.
Mr. Hanson, you better see this.
What is it, Elsa?
Message center for Steve. Mrs. Weston just left for the hospital.
What? Hello, Steve.
Yeah.
Stand by a minute.
Shall we hold the takeoff, Mr. Hanson?
What? Oh, yes. No, wait just a minute. It's too late now.
You going to tell him?
Maybe he's got enough to worry about.
Hey, what's holding us up, Hank? Something on your mind?
No, it's nothing, Steve. I just wanted to say good luck. Clear for takeoff, Charlie?
Right.
Okay. Give him the light. All right, Steve, I'm reading you clear.
I'm at 40,000. Airspeed 600. She's running fine. Soundproofing works. There's a third degree waver in the AGY pressure.
Got that, Charlie?
Check. Dead center on radar, Mr. Hanson.
50,000 now. Cutting out the port jet. Now the starboard. I'm off jets. Airspeed dropping. I'm opening the rocket ports. The switch sticks a little, Charlie. Oxy alcohol pressure 350. All right, now I'm advancing the ignition key. Here goes rocket one.
Steve, you all right?
Yeah. Looks like somebody struck me with a sledgehammer. Airspeed now, 1,200. Here goes number two.
Hello, Steve. Elapsed rocket time is now 4 minutes. What's your altitude? Over to you.
Speed 4,400. Still climbing. Altitude 297 miles.
All right, you're at the outer limit. Level off for maneuver test. You've got exactly 6 minutes fuel left.
Okay. Starting a 3-degree left bank. It's a little sluggish. There, it's all right now. There's a low vibration someplace. Maybe the cockpit hatch. Now I'm straightening out.
5 minutes fuel left.
Now I'm starting a 3-degree... Hey!
What's the matter? What's wrong?
There's something up here. Something shining.
What are you talking about?
There's something above me, Hank. I'm going to chase it.
Steve, you're at the outer limit now.
I can see it plain now.
Steve, don't go any higher. You've only got 4 minutes left. You've only got...
Getting static. I can't hear you, Hank. It's dead ahead now. I'm going to make a pass at it. Get a good look. Hey, it's swerving to meet me. It's dead ahead now. It's dead ahead.
Hello. Hello. Hello, Steve. Steve, come in.
9 minutes, fuel gone.
Still no sign on radar.
Hello. Hello, Steve. Steve, what's happened? Charlie, get out the crash squad. Tell the Army squadron to alert their search planes.
Right.
9.5 minutes gone.
Hello. Hello, Steve. What's happened? Well, what the devil is it?
Charlie,
hello.
For Mr. Hansen.
Come in, Steve.
We need a search squadron.
Come in.
No, Mr. Hansen's busy.
Hello. Hello, Steve. Hello, Steve.
10 minutes, Mr. Hansen. That's the end of this fuel.
How long has it been now?
10 hours, Mr. Hansen.
Nothing more on radar, Sergeant?
Screen's blank.
Colonel Corelli called in. Search planes are back. They didn't find anything.
Should be some trace.
He couldn't have bailed out, could he?
You don't hit the silk at 4,400 miles an hour. Either went past the outer limit, ran out of fuel. Something blew, and we'll find the pieces scattered from here to the coast. Why does it have to be the best man? Always the best man.
I'll get it, sir.
Charlie... Charlie, we've got to figure out what was wrong.
Yes. All right, I'll tell him.
Something must have blown.
Mr. Hansen, there's a message from Northside Hospital for Steve.
Well, what is it?
Mrs. Weston's fine. It's a boy.
Thank you, Elsie. It's a boy, Charlie.
Oh.
Fine. It's a boy. He didn't even know she went to the hospital. How am I going to tell Mary that?
Wasn't your fault, Mr. Hansen? Ship had to be tested.
Yeah, we'll build another one, and some other flying fool will shoot past the outer limit into space. Oh, I'm getting old, Charlie. You can remember when I used to take him up myself. Now I've got to send other men.
It's a job, Mr. Hansen.
Now I'm afraid. Every time I hear a jet go off, I jump. Every time I have to send someone up in a new model, I start to sweat.
Mr. Hansen?
Yeah?
I think there's something on the radar.
No flights scheduled in, are there, Elsie?
We have the whole day cleared.
It's coming in behind us. Here it comes over the building.
What crazy jockey is buzzing the field like that? Is that an Army plane, Charlie?
I can't see.
It's turning.
Charlie, alert the field.
I know that engine.
Steve! That's impossible.
Look, that's his ship.
It can't be.
Well, there's no other model like that. It's Steve, all right.
It's coming in.
Thank God. All right, sit down, Steve. The quicker we get this done, the quicker you get over to see Mary and the baby.
Hank.
Elsie, give the order to check and refuel the rockets. I don't want anybody in here till I get Steve's reports. Bury any calls. All right, let's have it. What the devil happened to you?
Hank, does that cosmic ray bomb still go off tonight?
What are you talking about? Straighten out, Steve. Where you been for the last 10 hours?
Listen, Hank, there's something more important.
Come on, I've got to get a report on the screen to Washington, so let's have it. I've got to know how you stretch 10 minutes fuel to keep you in the air for 10 hours.
Now, one thing before I talk.
Look, Steve.
Have the Geiger men run over the ship before they refuel.
What'd you run into?
So help me, Hank, I don't know. We better check and make sure it isn't radioactive.
Elsie, add a Geiger report on the standard check. Steve, maybe we better have the doc look you over, too.
No, I'll be all right. They said I'd be all right.
They? Look, son, I know you've had a tough time, but we've had this field on the alert for 10 hours. One of the Army boys cracked up looking for you, and he's hurt bad. So let's have the story. Let's have it straight.
I don't know how to tell you. Hank, I saw something up there.
At 300 miles?
I chased something up there, Hank, and I caught it.
Now, don't hand me that.
Listen, Steve. I was cruising along, just starting the right bank, when I spotted something. It must have been going about half my speed. It was egg-shaped and smooth. I made a pass at it, and I was coming back for another, and then there was a humming sound.
Humming?
A sort of vibration. And I blacked out. I was headed straight for it at 4,400 miles an hour. I thought it was going to be the biggest smash since Hiroshima, and... Hank, is there a drink in that bottle?
Never mind that, Steve. What happened?
I came to inside their ship.
Uh-huh. Steve, this whole thing has been a devil of a strain on you. I'm going to call Major Donaldson from the Army base. Ask him to sit in.
Psychiatrist? Yeah, that's a good idea. Let him run his tests. He'll tell you I'm not kidding. Because, Hank, unless I miss my guess, I've just been tipped off to the way the world ends.
All right, Mr. Weston, suppose you continue your story.
Yes, let's have it, Steve. You woke up inside the ship?
Yes, and the place was jammed with machinery. Dials, blinkers. I couldn't recognize anything.
And you were surrounded by these men from Mars?
I didn't say anything about men from Mars. I didn't even say they were men. I couldn't see them clearly. They were just there.
Where did they come from, then?
Another galaxy. Millions of miles outside of our solar system. That's all I know. You figure out where they came from.
And they came all that distance to find the Earth?
Yes.
Did they tell you that?
Yes.
You mean they spoke English to you?
No, they didn't. It's funny. I hadn't thought. They didn't really speak to me at all. They just planted the thoughts in my mind.
You mean thought transference, telepathy?
Yes, that's right.
Well, Steve, what brought them here?
We did, Hank. We rang their bell. We brought them in.
How?
With our atomic explosions. Hank, that's why you've got to stop that bomb test tonight.
I give up.
Look, you've got to believe me, Hank. Oh, how can I make you understand?
Would you submit to narcopsychometry?
What's that?
Under proper drugs, I can put you back in this ship. By suggestion. Then we can get a playback record of your memory pattern on the audio circuit.
How long will that take?
Half an hour. We'll have to go over to the lab.
Will you believe me if it checks?
It will give us an accurate memory picture of what your mind reports.
All right, let's go. Hank, you gotta believe me, we haven't got much time.
You should be getting drowsy now. Count backwards from 10.
10, 9, 8, 7.
He's under. Now we attach the head plate electrodes. The cortical pickup. Look out for that wire, Mr. Henson. 30 setting. 31.3. Now throw that switch, Mr. Henson. I have to start him off by suggestion. All right, Steve. You're in your ship now. You're in the rocket.
Rocket.
You're in the rocket. You're in the rocket, and you've just sighted something strange.
Now I'm starting at 3 degrees right.
What's that?
Hey, there's something up here. Something shining.
His memory pattern. We're picking it up electronically.
There's something above me, Hank. I'm going to chase it.
It's piped through the audio circuits.
I'm getting static. I can't hear you, Hank.
This is where we lost contact with him.
I'm going to make a pass at it, and... Hey, it's swerving to meet me. It's dead ahead now. It's dead ahead.
Now,
this is where he blacked out. There's no telling how long, minutes or hours.
What's that noise?
I don't know. Quiet.
Where?
How did I get in here? What? Who are you?
Is he seeing things?
Intergalactic Patrol? What's that?
What are they saying, Steve? What are they saying?
It's about nuclear fission. They know about it. They know the danger of it. Long ago, they had wars that almost destroyed them. But finally, they learned. Now they've outlawed war.
Go on, Steve.
They patrol space. When their detector picks up an atomic explosion, they send a patrol.
What are they going to do?
They've quarantined us.
Quarantined?
They've isolated the Earth. Because we don't know how to control ourselves yet. Until we learn, we'll be a menace to the whole universe.
What is this nonsense?
Quiet. How are they going to do it, Steve?
They've spread a layer out here of... I don't know how to call it. All around the Earth. It's miles deep. When there's an atomic explosion on Earth, the radioactive particles will drift up to this layer and set off a chain reaction. It'll go around the world in microseconds. And that's the end.
The end? What's he...
Wait.
Yes. Yes. I understand. I've got to bring back the warning. You're going to put me back in my ship to bring the warning.
Now what?
Blacked out again. I guess that's all.
What does all that mean?
It's what he remembers.
You don't think that really happened?
No, no. Not because psychometry circuits produce what he remembers. It just means that Steve believes this happened.
I don't like to see this. I've seen too many tough pilots snap. Steve is the best I've known. How bad do you think he is?
Frankly, outside of the presence of this well-organized hallucination, there's no sign of unbalance. May not be too serious. If he had a more plausible story, I'd be inclined to believe
him. Warning. Hank.
It's all right, boy.
Did you hear it, Hank? You understand?
Sure. We've been quarantined.
Let me give you something to make you sleep, Steve.
Don't you understand? They fixed it so that if we set off one more nuclear explosion, that'll be it.
Of course. Don't roll your sleeve down.
You don't believe me.
Now, take it easy, Steve.
At the test tonight, they're setting off the ZR bomb. Hank, what time is it?
11:20.
Well, it's scheduled for midnight. Hank, we got to stop that bomb.
Steve, let Donaldson give you the hypo.
Hank, you've got to believe me. I saw them. I got the warning. If we touch off that bomb tonight, it'll be the biggest galactic 4th of July of all time. The whole Earth will go up like a Roman candle. April 10th, 1965, the end.
Now, look, Steve, you better calm down. Don't you want to see Mary and the baby? You've got a new son, remember?
Yeah, that's just it. I want to see my son. I want him to live. If that bomb goes off, Hank, we've got to stop them.
Mr. Hansen, I think we'd better get over to the base hospital.
Hank, you've got to believe me.
Yeah, sure, Steve. Maybe there is something to it. Look, it's out of your hands. I'll put it in a report and shove it into Washington in the morning.
In the morning? There isn't going to be any morning, Hank. Don't you understand? You've got to call Washington now. Get the head of the Security Commission and postpone that test.
Now, you know I can't do that, Steve. My neck would be out a mile. Besides, this is 1965, not 45. 20 countries have atomic bombs now. What's the use of stopping just this one? The rest will keep right on popping them
off. Well, we'll have to call an international conference. Can't you understand, Hank? The first one that goes off finishes us at the end. They've given us the quarantine warning.
Steve, I think you'd better go with us to the base hospital.
Look, Steve, we can call up for a detail if we have to.
All right. I'll go with you. You don't need a straight jacket.
That's the way, Steve. You'll probably feel better by morning. Let's go.
Well, Steve, tomorrow I'll drive you over to the hospital to see Mary and the kid.
Sure.
Look at the ship under the floodlights. Pretty, huh? You'll be flying her again soon, don't you worry.
Yeah, I guess so. What's she doing out in the line? They refuel her?
Yeah, we got Clausewitz coming in tomorrow from Denver for another test. Figure we give you a day off.
That's good. That's fine.
Steve, come back. Come on, Donaldson. Steve, wait.
He's heading for the rocket. Look, there he goes up.
That crazy fool. We can't get at him now. That covers armor glass.
He's waving.
Yeah, towards control. It's the radio. He means the radio. Come on.
I should have gotten help.
Well, the radio's still hooked up here. Hello, Steve.
Listen to me, Hank. You gotta call Washington now.
Come out of that rocket, Steve.
I'll call my men.
Don't try anything, Hank. They refueled the rocket for tomorrow.
Take it easy, Steve.
Listen, you know what'll happen when I fire the rocket tubes down here?
Steve, don't.
It'll burn out every building for 5 miles. All of us in one big blast.
Steve, what do you want?
You've got to stop that bomb. You got to call Washington right now.
They won't believe me.
You make that call or I cut in the rocket. Now, I mean it, Hank. I hook my screen to yours in parallel. I want to see exactly what you're doing.
All right. Just don't fire those rockets.
Get going, Hank. You got 12 minutes to make that call and stop that bomb.
All right, I'm making the parallel hookup right now. Donaldson, you think you'll really blast?
I don't know. Up to now, I'd almost say it was normal, but now he's liable to do anything, Hanson.
Steve, there, you getting it on your screen?
Yeah. Now put that call through.
All right.
Operator.
Visit screen to Washington.
The visit screen circuits are busy, sir. You'll try again in half an hour.
This is Security Commission priority. Break in, get me a line.
Yes, sir. Just a moment, please.
10 minutes, Hank.
Listen, Steve, I'm trying.
We're ready to take your call, sir.
Washington, Security Commission 3, this is urgent. I want Undersecretary Herbert Ames.
Washington 3, one moment, please.
Hurry, will you?
One moment, please.
What time is it, Donaldson?
11:51.
Do you think he'll fire those rockets?
He might.
Washington?
Business screen 3, Mr. Herbert Ames, please.
That is a coded exchange. I cannot accept your call without clearance.
Get it through, Hank.
Listen, Washington, put it through. This is Mr. Hansen at San Marco Air Base. This is a priority call. I'm coded.
One moment, please. I will check your code number.
Get that through, Hank, or that bomb goes off at 12.
Will you be reasonable, Steve?
Your call has cleared, San Marco. Washington, business screen 3, Herbert Ames, please.
Security Commission Ames.
Listen, Ames.
Oh, hello, Hans.
Ames, you got to get me to the chief.
Are you kidding? He's at the test control room.
Yes, I know, but get him for me.
What's up? You look lousy. Or is it a bad circuit?
There's no time. I've got to get him before the test. It's about the CR bomb.
I can take that responsibility.
Get that through, Hank, or I blast.
Hey, what's going on there?
Ames, my project has a high enough rating. This is a priority A call.
What? Okay, it's your neck. I'll try to get him for you. He's in the control room, so you'll have to switch off your screen and speaker and go on earphones. Too much going on in there. Security ruling.
You hear that, Steve? I've got to cut the incoming screen.
All right. Don't try anything. 8 minutes, Hank.
Hello. What?
You got him, Hank?
Yes. This is Hansen at San Marco. No, sir. Priority A request to cancel the bomb test. No, I'm serious. This is deadly serious. We sent the X-2 JTR up today to the outer limit. We uncovered evidence. Yes, on the automatic instruments. What's that? No possible chain reaction. No, I can't tell you the whole story. There isn't time here. Yes, I'll bring the readings into Washington in the morning. You've got to postpone the test till you see them. Look, I worked on contracts for the commission for 10 years. Yes, I have complete confidence in my information. You can record that. All right, I'll call you back immediately. Bye.
Hank?
He's agreed to cancel, Steve. The bomb won't go off. All right, boy. You can come down out of that ship.
He's opening up. Here he comes.
All right, Steve. Come on down.
Sure, Hank. Just a second.
Hank, I was scared. I was plain scared.
Easy now. It's all over. The bomb won't go off.
Thank God. Look, I want to see Mary and the baby. Can you get me transportation now?
Oh, wait a minute. It's almost 12. They won't let you in the hospital now.
I want to see the baby.
Sure you do, but you've been under a strain. I've got a shot for you here, Steve. Give you a good night's sleep. All right. Roll up your sleeve.
Yeah, here.
Yeah, that'll make you sleep. Sergeant will find you a bed.
Yes, sir. Come on, Mr. Weston.
Okay. Good night, Hank. I'm kind of beat. It's been a tough night.
It sure has. I thought for a minute he was going to blast those rockets and send us all to Kingdom Come.
Yeah.
Quite a stunt getting the ray bomb test called off.
It isn't called off.
But the chief said...
Ames couldn't get the chief. I was talking to a dead circuit. Bomb goes off in a couple of minutes.
Oh. Poor Steve. He was one of the best.
He was the best. 1 in 10 million.
Some story of his, poor guy. For a while, he almost had me believing that quarantine. That's a very common delusion. End of the world.
Yeah. I suppose so. Ah, it's a nice night. Never saw the stars so bright.
We better be getting in. That wind is cold.
Well, the bomb goes off in 30 seconds. Poor Steve.
You know, Hanson, there's just one thing.
Yeah?
It's It's outside my field, but I'm curious. How did he keep that ship in the air for 10 hours with only 10 minutes fuel?
Tonight's story, transcribed on Dimension X, The Outer Limit by Graham Dorr, was adapted for radio by Ernest Canoy. Featured in the cast were Joseph Julian as Steve, Wendell Holmes as Hank, and Joe DeSantis as Major Donaldson. Your host is Norman Rose. Music was by Albert Berman. Sound designed by Sam Monroe. Edward King directed.
From 1950, there's Dimension X and The Outer Limits. Well, that's all the time we have for today, but tune in again next week and invite a friend to listen and enjoy more great moments from the golden age of radio. I'm Craig Roberts with those thrilling days of yesteryear. Till next time, so long.
Radio, remember radio. We'd sit and close our eyes and use our
SSRDB San Francisco, where the big bands swing.